Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for June 29th, 2020. This great month is almost over, so we can go on to the next month of apocalyptic meltdown.
So far, 2020 has been awesome. It's been great.
It's so fun.
Plague, war,
tumult,
violence. Someone said if... Yeah, you know, they always look back in the past and wonder what it would be like to live through riots in the street and a plague, and then the economic desolation. And look, we have all three in just 3 months or however long.
It's so fun. So we have some actual questions today. There were some good, and then if we have time, I forgot, maybe we could talk about some of the stupid comments I got on my blog that I didn't post. And this is good because we don't need to keep talking about tumult and plague endlessly. Mm-hmm. And I actually think we have more questions than we can answer. So I think you should go first.
The first is just about Facebook etiquette. And I'm not sure why I was asked about Facebook etiquette, because
you're not very nice on Facebook.
I'm not the nicest person on Facebook. But I think it has to do with how you engage in arguments without letting a mob get started, without being mobbed, those kinds of things. I mean, just, and that's relevant because just today, last night, on Twitter, Jonathan Merritt said,
I don't know why you're laughing.
It's funny. He put out this video saying, if you are living, if you're an openly homosexual lifestyle without any kind of repentance at all, it's no problem at all. You just come right into the kingdom. No need to repent for you. And so I said the clear and obvious thing, Jonathan Merritt is not a Christian. And I mean, I've been all night having to block people.
Well, I mean,
because he retweeted me, and then the Twitter mob got started. I think I blocked 200 people now. I forgot how many I blocked, but I've also got 100 new friends. So
I'm sure those people are deeply committed to you.
I feel close friendship with them. But
so I you but that, go ahead. You said, well, you have to say it. You have to support me. So I tweeted, neither is Jen Hatmaker, and I lost a bunch of followers. I had worked my way up, and now I'm slowly losing.
Yeah. Okay.
Twitter followers.
It's really not sad. Difficult though, because Jesus says, if you abide in my word, you're my disciple. So that means that if you don't abide in his word and you actually reject his word, that you're not his disciple. So Jen Hatmaker and Jonathan Merritt are not his disciples. Now, I've had several responses to that. People say, well,
that's canceling.
Jesus never said anything
about homosexuality.
Okay, so
let's go back to the 90s, shall we?
Yeah. I happen to think Jesus is God, and that means that he didn't just speak the red letter parts in the New Testament. He also inspired all of the scriptures. So you either don't believe Jesus is God, or you don't believe the Bible is inerrant and infallible, or inspired by God. So we don't have any... there's no common ground here to argue with. We can argue about whether Jesus is God if you want, or we can argue about whether the Bible is his word. But the reality is, yes, if Jesus is God, he did say quite a bit about sexual immorality, and homosexuality being one of those sexual immoral acts. But anyway, that's not the topic. So anyway, saying that someone is not a Christian because they have rejected the words of Christ is just plain on its face. And then I get...
it's not canceling the person as a person.
No, that's not canceling someone. That's saying what's true.
I mean,
I haven't blocked Jonathan Merritt. Is not one of the ones I blocked.
It's fine for, I think it would be perfectly acceptable for somebody who comes and rejects Allah as a Muslim to get on Twitter and say, that person's not a Muslim anymore. Right. That's not... I expect that person wouldn't be piled on.
Right.
But it's okay if you... to make observations, I think, about the state of things.
Assuming that they're
correct,
true. They're not necessarily correct, but they're not untrue. They're not contrary to the to what God teaches. But so here, let me just read the question. It might be easier to do that than talk about it in a more general way. I think it'd be very helpful for a very helpful podcast for many of us to hear you talk about how you approach Facebook etiquette.
I feel like it's a funny question.
For example, rules of engagement, when and why it's appropriate to block someone, and whether that's the same as counseling. So there are two reasons I think you could block. And I guess we're also talking about what capacity you have. Are you talking about your personal page? Are you talking about a page that you manage? Those are two different things. And a page you manage, you should set out some ground rules for how people engage on the page.
You should say what yours are on that.
And mine are, there's no tone, on the ACNA unofficial page that I run, there's no woke shaming. I don't let people come in and say, call people racist or white supremacists or whatever, unless there's an actual evidence that those are actually true about somebody. And if that is true about somebody, that person gets blocked. Okay, so no woke shaming, no tone policing, which is, you know, you post something and then someone comes on and says, I need to, your tone is insensitive or something. Well, tone is so nebulous and so hard to nail down, that especially in writing, that it leaves everything open to subjective judgment. So it, really, if we were to say that certain tones are acceptable and other tones are unacceptable, who would be the judge of that?
And because it easily slides over into not actually the tone, but the substance of what they're saying. Like some people will come, if you say something like Jesus is God. Or Jonathan Merritt is not a Christian. Immediately people will be like, that's really mean. You can't say that. And yeah, they'll start tone policing. But actually it's under the guise of, I mean, the guise is tone policing, but really they don't like what you said.
Yeah. Tone policing takes everything off the topic, which is another rule I have on the page. Don't go off topic. If someone posts something about an actual subject, you have to talk about that subject. And tone policing says, no, let's not talk about the subject. Let's talk about the tone of the way that,
or the person that it was, that somebody would dare to ask the question at all.
Right. Yeah. So it's a way of shutting down debate, like you said. So I just don't allow it.
which enrages people.
So I give the, and the third rule is, if I, as a moderator of a page, give you a warning and you don't heed it, you're immediately blocked. So it's just there's no question about it. So you don't argue with the moderator about anything. You just get blocked. And I know that sounds totalitarian, but if you have a page with that 1,800 people, you know, some people have to be hung in the square. I'm sorry, it's Machiavellian, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have to have quick, swift justice in the public square so that people see.
In order to create, as they say, a safe space.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people actually don't feel safe in conversations like this because they've been shut down, or they know they're going to be shut down. And so they won't engage, and they might have interesting things to say, more interesting things to say than the people who are coming in and shouting that the conversation shouldn't even be going on in the first place.
Right.
So
there has to be a strong sheriff in the town.
Yeah.
And then, so the other rule I have is that you can't do, and this, you mentioned this earlier, is that if I get the sense that someone is going off the page, getting a whole posse of people, and then coming back on the page to overload the page with comments in support of someone, I'll probably shut that down. It depends on the circumstances. I don't like the practice of being in an engagement with somebody online, just having a back and forth, and then one person going and getting all of his friends, like by messenger, to come and pile on the thread. That also shuts down the dialogue. That just makes everything go badly. So I usually shut those kinds of threads down. But that's when I'm moderating. So, the ACNA unofficial page, but my own page, I kind of have the same rules. I don't let people tell them, please, me or anyone else on my page. I don't let mobs form. I don't, uh, I don't, I'll warn someone once or twice. If they're a really close friend, I'll probably let it slide a little bit more on my personal page, not on my official page. But I don't, I'll block rather quickly if someone decides they don't care what I would like to have done on my page.
So in other words, you feel a sense of ownership over your page, yeah, and you control how it goes down there.
Right.
Which is a little bit offensive. And how dare you?
Right, right.
I mean, no, I'm asking, how dare you? How is it that you dare to do that?
Well, again, I mean, I really do want engagement. I want people to come on who, I don't mind people coming on and disagreeing with me if they're like honestly wanting a conversation. And that happens all the time. So it's good, but that can only happen in the context of well-defined rules.
Because people do need some kind of safety in order to talk about some of this stuff.
Right.
It can't just be a mob, which is the way Twitter is in particular, I think. Although yeah, some parts of Facebook are just mobbing, and it's not fun.
Right.
It's not interesting. Nothing interesting is said in a mob.
Yeah, and that, so the mob, what happens in a mob is people are just interested in virtue signaling. They're coming in to virtue signal to everyone else how righteous they are by condemning the person who said something horrible in their view. Where is my, I'm trying to get the question. Okay, so the next, you want to just have something else?
No, go ahead.
Say whether or not that's the same as canceling, or is blocking the same as canceling. Well, no, because I mean, canceling is where you try to get everybody else to blocking destroy is like your personal life. Decision that you don't want this person commenting anymore on your personal page or on another page, and there needs to be a legitimate reason for it. I think, you know, just block somebody because you don't like them, but you block somebody because they disagree with you, but block somebody because they're not observing the rules that you've established for your page, and then you're not going after them. You're not asking your followers to go.
And destroy and them.
Destroy that person.
You're not doxing them. Yeah.
Yeah, because canceling is a whole holistic practice of destroying someone's whole person. It's I don't. A lot of the people I blocked, I don't have anything personal against at all. I mean, I'm sure that if we met in person, they'd be fine. I'd be fine, and we could have a nice conversation. But just sometimes with some personalities, that doesn't work over the internet. So. It's better not to be in their circle and not to have them in your circle.
That's the thing too. I think it's really, really fine. I see every now and then I see a scolding. Well, don't make it so that your feed is only full of people that you agree with, you know, by muting or blocking everyone. Don't make yourself insular.
Right.
And I would say, okay, that's sort of true, but also it's important not to hate people. So I quickly mute people who I begin to judge harshly based on the quality of their posts, which happens to me really easily. So every now and then I go through and I mute every single person on my page on Facebook and sometimes Twitter.
This is you and I have a very different.
Yeah. Who says the word Trump. So if you say in certain seasons, then I go and unmute people after a bit, but if you, and I don't care, it's left or right. If for some reason you come on and you think, you know what I'm going to do this morning, I'm going to go on the internet, I'm going to talk about Trump, and I see your post, I may even agree with you about it, but I'll mute you immediately because I don't want to hate you as a person. And I don't want to think about Trump all the time. I don't want everything to be. I don't want to be sucked into the hole of horror. The political, everything has to be political. So that will clean up my feed for a while and be really helpful. But I think that that's an act of charity. It's not me trying to shut down my discourse, because I can still go read The Hill and The Daily Beast, and I can still find stuff out there that I may really disagree with. I don't have to insulate myself. But it's important for me as a Christian not to loathe you and want you to die. Yeah. So
yeah.
In order that I can pray for you and love you, I may have muted you if you've been super political on Facebook or Twitter. And
that's I'm very different than you in that regard. I'd like to know what the other side is thinking. Not that you don't, I'm just saying you, but I want to have a pretty good view of what other people are saying who totally disagree with me. So I'll read through, and I have friends on Facebook who I haven't muted who are pro, you know,
everything,
pro Trump and anti Trump. I have people who want same sex marriage, people who don't, people that I have all of it. So I can hear. And in fact, you know, this leads up, I don't want to talk too much about this issue, but I belong to groups that I completely disagree with. The Facebook groups about environment, or Facebook groups about sexuality that I would consider the position of the group totally wrong, but I'm there, and I guess I'm doing what they call lurking because I want to see what they're saying. And that's, you know, there's some people were outed recently for belonging to the Geneva Commons Facebook page, and there are some really horrible things said on that page about Amy Bird, who we really love. But you know, I don't think necessarily belonging to a group necessarily puts you in a bad place, because I think a lot of people do just join groups because they want to hear what people are saying without necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with it.
It's an information gathering exercise.
Yeah, it's information gathering. That's what I do. I belong to lots of groups. Now, I guess we should be more
circumspect about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to.
I don't want to be doxxed.
I don't want to be doxxed, but
I'm going to go through and get out of all the homeschool groups I'm in because I don't want them to come. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of crazy homeschool groups out there that probably are saying stuff that I would never want not ever say myself.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked at them in ages. So I do think that that's, I mean, so part of the problem I feel with the internet, the social media, is it's so big, you know, and you're exposed to so many people that you would never know in real life. And having a both having the conversation for real in as much as you can and be charitable, that's a really hard balance. Yeah. I can't have the conversation for real, actually, on social media. I get way too overwrought. Just looking, I'm in a couple of Facebook groups that looking at what people are posting there makes me want to die. I just feel really stressed and angry when I look at what people are posting and saying in some of the groups I'm in. So I never go to them unless I can help it for some reason. And then because I don't want to judge, I don't want to be hating people in my heart. Whereas you can more dispassionately engage in groups without having your emotional life destroyed. And so that's a really big difference. And I would say, I've said this to myself, maybe I've said it to you. If you can't be dispassionate, like if you can't talk about the issue without judging the other person, in a personal way, then you probably shouldn't be on social media.
Right.
That should be a test that you make for yourself. And I've noticed often that things shift when a conversation will be going on and the people involved in the conversation will think that they're talking about the issue, and then somebody will come on or somebody in the conversation will shift it, mm-hmm. and it all suddenly becomes personal.
Yeah.
And then everybody flounders and like tries to figure out what just happened. And that person that who line. Comes in and suddenly makes it personal, that person shouldn't have even been reading the thread.
Right.
If you feel like it's about you or it's about
anything,
you should just get off
right.
suddenly. Or you feel like defending somebody, you know, and scolding, if you feel like being a Karen, just get off. Just think, okay, this isn't my thing. I don't need to tell anybody what to do or what to think.
You know, people say that Facebook or conversations never change anyone's mind. But, if you get the parameter of the conversation nailed down, I've had some really good discussions with people I disagree with. very good that have changed my mind, and I think I've changed others' minds. And I don't just think that, I know that from the actual outcome. One guy I talk about, he's not a reform person. Someone who disagrees quite seriously with reform theology. But we've had some really good exchanges, and it's been, we go away friends. Another one I had recently, I posted this dialogue on Stand Firm with Matthew Wilcoxon, who's an Anglican priest who disagrees with me about critical theory and how much that influences the woke debate. And we were kind of going at each other for a while with more heat than light, but then we had a really good conversation ultimately. And so it can happen if you have the right parameters and you go into it with the right attitude.
Yeah.
Which I don't always do. I'm not putting myself in the position of someone who always approaches my Facebook conversation.
Okay, well, I'll say something nice about you real quick before, is there any more of that question? I do think that now of all times in the world is a time to speak. And part of the problem is that we're all having is that it is dangerous to speak. There's more and more to lose every day in internet engagement, which is shaping and forming how people think about everything, yeah. Christianity and everything. And part of the woke stuff that I don't like and I think is really dangerous is that the purpose of it is to shut down the conversation.
Right.
Like, it is to make all speech stop by mislabeling it violence or whatever. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I think a lot of us who maybe not don't feel inclined this way at all, but a lot of us should be grateful for you for being willing to go out and say stuff that is increasingly unacceptable to say. Like, Jonathan Merritt isn't a Christian. You know, like, that's an obvious statement. And yet, a lot of people are lurking around on Twitter thinking, oh, gosh, there's Jonathan Merritt again. What am I going to do? I can't, you know. And he's claiming ground, with his video. He's claiming ground. And if real Christians are afraid to say anything, which they are, then there we are. And that's been what happened with Jen Hatmaker. She came out, and she was all warm and fluffy and she claimed ground, and Orthodox Christian women have been afraid.
Bent over and let it happen.
Yeah. And so, like, okay, if you can get out there and speak and you're not going to lose your job, you're not going to destroy your life, and you have the energy and the intellect to do it, that's a good thing to do right now. That's actually a good way to proceed. And if you see somebody doing that out there combating and don't go in and undercut them by tone policing them or being anxious even about how it's going, if they're going to make you look bad. They're going to probably misstep sometimes, but these conversations have to happen or they won't be, or we'll lose the time, the window that we have.
That's a really good point. We might want to not engage on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it might be, but those who are pushing false doctrines, those who are trying to change, push revolution in our civil sphere, they're using social media, and they gain ground by agitprop, by propaganda agitation. And if you don't speak the truth in the public square, which is increasingly social media, then there's, you're just seeding it. And that social media is highly influential. It's highly influential.
Even though it's a small number of people.
Here's the thing is you say something like Jonathan Merritt's not a Christian, and you're going to probably get ratio. That means you're probably get a lot more people commenting on the text than liking it. And so it'll look to you like the popular sentiment is totally against you, but I guarantee that a ton of people are reading that and saying, yeah, it's right. And glad someone's finally saying that or something. So you're not,
but they're not, they're too afraid to push like
that. You're shoring up people who mm-hmm. could otherwise be influenced and think, oh my goodness, everybody's going this way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm totally alone. Maybe I'm wrong. You're shoring up the orthodoxy.
Yeah.
By speaking.
Yeah. Although I do love a good ratio. I mean, sometimes the ratio indicates something was wrong, like Rusty Reno. Like, he deserved that ratio. That was a glorious ratio. I mean, sometimes you might be wrong on the internet. And and that's why canceling is so bad, because it should be possible to be wrong on the internet and still be a human being.
Yeah. I remember one time this was before the age of social media, but I wrote an article on Stand Firm. I posted all over social media about Mark Galli on Christianity Today, because I misread an article of his that he said, I forgot what he was saying, but I misread him as being open to the question of human sexuality being fluid. And I posted it. I got a lot of people coming back, pointing out my error. So I wrote an article the next day apologizing to Mark Galli, and sent him a personal note about it, and published an article publicly and posted it everywhere. I posted the other one, and it was good. Mark Galli sent me a private note thanking me and publicly said he appreciated the apology, and it was good. It was, you know, because you can actually be corrected. And
I mean, that was kind of the old days.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's possible anymore, but
right. As
we become more entrenched. We are going to say more about Amy Bird, but we're reading her book. And so that, who knows how long that's going to take.
Yeah,
she
spoke at the Diocese of Living Words clergy conference about integrating women into your ministries. This was 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just a lovely person. I
okay, and here's the thing.
If we end up disagreeing with her about the substance of the issue, there's no reason to be
like, you should talk about the issue. Right, I guess what's interesting is that the Geneva Commons thing, it looked like, again, instead of engaging with her about the issue that she's trying to talk about, which I think is a really essential one, again, they made it personal. Mm-hmm. So like, there wasn't any reason to do that. You could, you know, there were jokes about how they, you know, don't worry about reading her book. You don't have to do that. Well, actually,
you should read her book.
Yeah, you should read her book. Who are you?
I actually think she, having met her and seen her talk and listened to her, I think she's really hungry for actual substantive exchanges.
Yeah.
So if you disagree with what she writes in her book, and you write not a
personal screed,
but just an actual point by point review discussion, I think she'd appreciate that.
Yeah. I also, here's how that debate, I think, gets sucked in. Like, the question about what women, or how women live, how Christian women should live in the world and in the church, even, like, how should we work this out practically, is a different one than the question of sexuality. Because it has cultural overtones, and it can be really dicey. The way that women think about themselves changes by generation and so on. There's some unchangeable things that can't be moved, which everybody agrees on, basically. But we should be able to have the conversation about that I think she's trying to have, that I've seen in the first part of her book. And if you say, no, 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 this is going to lead to homosexuality or whatever, that, I mean, that's another way of just shutting it down. You end up, again, pushing it outside of the bounds of the church, which is what happened in the first place. That's how you ended up with Jen Hatmaker.
Right.
Is by saying, like, no, 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 we can't talk about this. You're wicked for even bringing it up. Okay, well, I mean, all those women went on the internet.
I don't think she'd ever go there. But, I mean, you know, pushing someone like Amy Bird to the other side by just being a jerk.
Yeah, it's like so stupid.
I don't think she would ever do that. But I'm just saying, you know.
No, but I feel like people are trying to be like, look, well, if she's being accused of
Being
feminist.
And I don't
think she is. I mean, what everything that I've read three of her books. Well, I've read two. I'm reading the third book now, and I'm sorry, but I'm probably more feminist than Amy Bird. And
I guess we should also say we're looking at this from an Anglican perspective, which, you know,
which means we don't get it. Like, what
a lot of, yeah,
what is your problem?
We're fundamentally not going to get the Orthodox Presbyterian debates.
Just like I don't get you Southern Baptists.
Right, right.
I don't get all the, I just don't get it. Every time somebody starts screaming, I'm like, what are you screaming about? Anyway, I'm pigeonholing that. Should we go? Did you find that?
So how you define a troll is the next part of the question.
Yes. Okay.
And I would say a troll is someone who is, again, isn't looking for a conversation. They're just in the score points with a quick quip. Or
I feel like you become troll-like when you say nope. No one should ever say nope.
Well, I usually say nope to trolls.
I know, but you shouldn't answer a troll according to his folly.
A troll according to his trolley.
His trolley.
That's good. So yeah, I do. That's one area where I do get, when you see me being mean on the internet, it's usually in response to a troll. Not always, but it's usually in response to a troll who's come on and with the sole purpose is to enrage, to insult, to...
I can read some troll comments from my blog that I haven't put up.
Yeah, I mean, she'll read one just so
okay,
we can
see
a troll comment.
This is... I feel like this is super troll. I wrote Humility and Pride Month yesterday. Yes, Jesus is so important that anything humans do is pathetic. So first he's mischaracterized my piece. That's not what I said. I can't help read the last part of this and think of an abusive partnership where the abuser keeps belittling their lover. Oh, I love you, but you're an evil, wicked person who can never do anything right unless you abandon everything for me. What a lovely thought. So this person just completely mischaracterized my piece.
Right. Which was how, yes, we're sinners, but God loves us anyway.
Yeah, it was actually about...
And yeah, it's not like an equal part. It's not like my husband and wife. It's like actual God who's perfect.
God and sees and all. A sinner.
Right, who does make us like his bride, but okay. It's not on equal terms there.
Then I got another one, Humility and Pride Month. The Wolf of Odin says, Hail Odin.
That's a troll. That's clearly a troll. So the whole thing, you can see that the person, neither one of those comments came in wanting a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted a score point.
Right.
And so.
And make me feel bad.
Right. And the best response is not to say nope and go on and do all the stuff that I would do. But the best response.
I mean,
response
you would put it up and answer it.
Yeah.
Right.
The
and
best response to a troll is just to block the troll.
I am going to delete these comments without putting
right.
them up.
Right. So that's where you see things getting really heated on the internet. It's usually, and on my page anyway, it's usually where I've done the unwise thing of not blocking the troll and gone ahead and.
And answered the troll according to his trolley.
Right.
So is that the last part of it?
Well, the next part was about let's see, how you define a troll and how to know when you're trolling someone else's page. And I guess, yeah, the same thing when you're going on, you're not really intending to converse, but to whack at somebody you're trolling, and you should probably not do that.
You know what I think would be great is to make up an Anglican prayer for the person going on the internet. Like, it should be part of the Great Litany.
Yeah.
Should add, like, and oh, Lord, for those of us who have trolled today,
yeah.
we, good Lord, deliver us.
Yeah. So the next one is your stance on tone pleasing. We've already kind of talked about that. And then whether to ask other Facebook friends to help you during a Facebook mob attack on your page. Well, if you're being mobbed by a mob, then I guess if you don't want to block the mob, which I think is the first step to take, then yeah, I guess in that case it's okay to get allies in your
I mean you do that you come in and say you have to go like all my comments on this thread.
My wife.
I'm like, okay, but I don't have time to stop my day and go to a 300 comment thing and go in and like every single one of your comments.
That's
like,
because you're my wife and I need your help.
I don't want that's not what it means. My help cometh from the Lord. That isn't what that word means.
Yeah, so the best response to that is you know, if you're being mobbed, I guess you could get another mob to go after the mob. The better thing, I guess. And I'm speaking here.
Count the cost.
Listen to what I do. Listen to what I say, not what I do. It's just block the mob.
Okay, but count the cost. Yeah. Like if you look at a mob coming on and think, okay, you know what, I can make some instructive comments here to people who might be lurking. And I'm being ratioed, but I'm going to go ahead and do this. Because I think the things that I want to say are actually important, and people need to hear them.
Yeah.
Or I need to say them. I guess I don't ever like to say people need to hear anything. Like, my voice is so important right now, and this Twitter mob thing that's going on. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's
kind of, I don't want to elevate how important any of it this is. Right. Although I do think, like, this is where it's all playing out. So.
Right.
Well,
that's what's going on. I mean, I think you're right about that, because I'm just blocking people now on Twitter because there's too many people. It's humanly impossible for me to respond to all the negative hate-filled comments that are directed toward me for saying that Jonathan Merritt's not a Christian. But I've responded to some of them, and I've said, like, the popular "Thou shalt not judge." And I've gone and responded to that one. Jesus never said about homosexuality. I've responded to that one. You're a Pharisee. I've responded to that one.
Yeah, you could pick one of each type and then block everything.
And, well, the Old Testament says you shouldn't have two types of material on your clothing. So I'll go in and, like, instructively respond to those, but then I'll block the person I'm responding to, so you can see so I don't have to mess with me anymore. But
the problem is, it isn't going to take you all day. I've lost you in the day because you've started a...
I love you.
Yeah.
I'm with you always.
Yeah.
Even to the end of the age.
Oh my gosh. So I guess there should be some balance. So on the one hand, I think that this is important. You should, if you have the ability to engage, and like me, I don't have the ability to engage. If you have the ability to engage, you should. But the rules that you should set for yourself are important, and you should not overestimate your own value as a human being, like, and your own abilities. So you should feel a sense of humor about it. You know, you shouldn't go into a Twitter or a Facebook. It may be really important for you to do, but instead of saying, my voice is so important right now, I need to do this, you should say, I don't have it together.
Yeah.
I'm going to just go in here and say some stuff and try to beat back civilizational decline, whatever, la, 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 la. But I'm not going to examine my own importance as part of this.
Right.
I'm not going to bring in the epic woke, it's very important. I'm a very important person. And the work that I'm doing right now is very, very important. If you have that feeling, right, and you have no ability to laugh at the conversation or anything at all, then maybe you should go dig in your garden and not.
I'm rebuilding the walls in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
You're my Tobias.
So, you're my Tobias.
So I'm going to see because I'm so righteous.
I'm so righteous. Maybe not. Maybe this is a good time for you not to engage on the internet. I don't know. I think there should be some self-examination, but not. Yes. I don't know. I think de-escalating the epicness of it is, right, is good for your own mental health.
I think that's the last of the questions on the.
Oh, okay.
So we should.
Do we have? Should we save this other one for later?
What's the other one? What time is it?
Let's see. How long have we been doing this? Oh goodness.
I think we should go for it.
Okay.
Because I think that our listener might be bored by this one.
This one topic.
Spend a lot of time on.
Okay.
Talk about something else too.
All right. This I'm actually not. This is supposed to be maybe a written thing, but I haven't been able to think it through. But we've said in some podcasts that when your spouse sins, you shouldn't make it into a moral issue or something like that. Can you tell me more about that? Point me to some references. I've never heard this. It's because we made it up.
Yeah.
And. Especially if it is definitely a moral issue, what should you do? I don't know how to do this.
Well, okay. So I think what we're trying to say is you're not the Holy Spirit. And yeah, of course, if your spouse has a crack cocaine factory in the basement, you want to say, hey,
that is a moral issue.
That's a moral issue. You did not something you just say, oh well,
whatever you want to do,
whatever you want to do, honey. But like there are some, like, let's say, let's just use
okay,
drinking
but you
as, an
could,
ex- as an example. Let's
you
say
could,
your husband drinks too much.
Okay.
Or your wife drinks too much. And you know it's wrong. And he knows it's wrong. So you're not, you see your blinding revelation that, hey, honey, this is wrong, is not going to really do anything because if your husband or wife knows it.
But can't really deal for one reason or another.
Yeah. So the question would be is the problem such that your husband or wife is abusive? I mean, if that's the case, then I think you need to insist on counseling. You see, this is something we need to get dealt with. And you can, and I think that in the course of counseling, the counselor would insist that the husband or wife go to some program to get taken care of, right? So that's necessary. It'd be dangerous.
You can make some ultimatums.
Yeah, but
probably.
Depending. But with every sin, there comes a point where, okay, the person's just, your husband or your wife is,
they're a sinner.
A sinner, right? So there's going to be something that's not going to change in this life about that person. And if you see it as your job to sanctify, I think marriage sanctifies just by itself, by you being with another person who's not you.
Yeah.
And having to love that person, that's sanctifying. But you are not the sanctifier. You, it's not your job to get inside the heart of your spouse and change it. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So letting someone be a sinner and forgiving and loving that person anyway is, I think, what we were talking about.
Yeah. And so not casting things, I mean, of course, everything couldn't be made into a moral issue, but not casting things in a moral light, like, because I think the tendency is actually to make things that are not moral into a moral issue.
Right.
That's more usual. I'm trying to think, like, you know, you didn't help me with the dishes. You never help me with the dishes. I always have to do the dishes by myself. If you really loved me, and God,
drawing conclusions about
you would do these dishes with and for me, because a person who loves his wife does the dishes. And what kind of person are you that you wouldn't do the dishes? Like, what kind of immoral, wicked person are you that you wouldn't even want to? Okay, and so you can take that
case.
You can do that with, say, a person who's drinking too much. Well, a person who trusts God doesn't drink too much. You don't trust God. Like, why would you drink too much? You know?
Yeah.
Or,
That's really good. That's a really good point.
And so you can say, you can actually de-escalate that.
You can become a little Pharisee though, in your little marriage.
In your little marriage. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's what
people don't have, like, little marriages.
You're building a case against your spouse as a Pharisee would.
Right. You can also add laws instead of just applying a law. You can add to that law by adding extra things to it. So, you know, it's bad to drink too much, but when you add the law of love, like, the reason he's drinking too much is because he doesn't love me. If he loved me, or he doesn't love Jesus, you've added something that didn't need to be there into the mix. Or I'm trying to think of something else, but it quickly becomes your moral judgment of the person quickly becomes a test of of that person's worth.
It's a lot, culture, your family culture has a lot to do with this. We talked about this when we did our marriage podcast, is that you come from a family that established its own ways of interacting with one another. Your spouse comes from another family that has sometimes very, very different ways of interacting, and there's nothing necessarily sinful about either one of those, but when you come up against each other, it seems like sin.
Yeah, because you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it differently than my family does it, so you're wrong. And then you can easily go and start building up cases against the other person and attributing wickedness rather than just different ways of thinking about about the house or about the
car. I mean, and actually alcohol is a good thing like that because people have different, very different ideas about how much
if you come from a teetotaling family.
Yeah. And then you marry somebody who's like
Irish.
Yeah. You're going to end up thinking, well, this person is just wicked. Absolutely right. Wicked. And that person actually just has a totally different view of alcohol and how much, and isn't maybe trying to hide from Jesus. Maybe not. You don't know. You would only know that by living with a person for a long time and trying not to be mean to them. So, I think it's, and this is true, like, with everything, I think it's part of the broader problem that we're having right now is that people are making moral judgments about the thoughts and feelings of people on the internet when a lot of it is actually a difference of perspective. So I think that the statue thing is kind of a good example of this. Mm. You've been quick to say people who disagree with me are Satan.
Me?
On the question of statues.
I have not.
Yeah, you have. You've been like, if you want to put tear down that statue, you're literally Hitler.
I have not said that. I haven't said Hitler. I said you're a Marxist.
Yeah, this is totally different. Whereas in some cases, I actually think it's possible, not often, but sometimes it's
you it's, didn't listen to my podcast. I made a very clear
I listened to
concise
half of it.
Distinction.
Okay, but I mean, it's possible to see the person who wants to tear down the statue as having a really good point about that and a good reason for wanting to do it. And the person who wants to keep the statue to also see their point and their reason.
I can understand someone wanting to take down, say, a statue of Adolf Hitler. That makes total sense. And not have it in the public square. Yeah. But put it in a museum or something. Don't just wreck it.
But the thing is, like, the conversation degrades suddenly when, as everyone is doing, you make it suddenly into a moral issue.
Right.
So the person who wants to keep the statue is wicked for having that inclination. Nothing about their desire to keep the statue can be good. Nothing.
Right.
And the person who wants to keep the statue, looking at the person who wants to tear it down, cannot countenance any circumstance under which looking at that statue might be painful. It's a moral issue. That person wants to tear it down because they hate history and hate God. So, like, no, actually.
Maybe. Antifa does.
Yeah.
Antifa hates history and God, so that they're tearing down the statues is really...
Yeah, I feel bad for Antifa, though. They look really sad and miserable with all their masks on.
Right. Okay, so now, like, for example,
I mean, have some
totally
compassion.
Sympathize with the people
and the woke people don't want you to see any of this nuance. Like, they don't want you to feel any compassion for all the people in the crowd. Look at the crowds of people who are screaming at each other, and pray for compassion for all the people in the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, but the point being, no, you have to pick one of those. No, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't have to pick.
I completely sympathize, for example, with those who want to take the Confederate flag symbol off of the Mississippi flag. I was born in Mississippi. Because, yeah, okay, that's, even though historically it was just a battle flag, I get the problem that when African Americans see the Confederate flag raised as their state flag,
crushing.
I can see it being crushing and hurtful. So I have no problem with the state taking that thing off, that symbol off. But does that mean that everybody who has a Confederate flag is necessarily a KKK member and a white supremacist? No. It for some people, it represents history. And there were some good things that people did who wore the gray uniform during the Civil War. And there's nothing... There are brave acts.
Not all of them were literally Hitler.
Not all of them are literally Hitler. A lot of them, the distinction I made in that podcast, this is probably going too far off the topic, but the distinction I made in that Stand Firm podcast was there are people who are authors of evil, who construct wicked systems and who murder systemically millions of people, like, you know, Stalin is someone like that, or Lenin is someone like that, Adolf Hitler is someone like that. And then there are people who have born generations later within a system that's wicked, who don't sufficiently interrogate that system, and who just kind of go along with the flow of culture and even defend it, like Robert E. Lee, for example, who shouldn't have fought on the side of the Confederacy. He should not have done that. He should have interrogated more closely his tie, the moral value of slavery, although he spoke against it several times. But there's a difference between someone who's just a person of his time or her time and a person who creates a system of murder and wickedness. And I think that distinction's lost.
So, well, yeah, I think it's now, lost on purpose.
Like, let's say people have, let's say 100 years from now, hopefully, may God make it happen, the world has its eyes open regarding the mass slaughter of babies. So what do you do with a statue of Obama? Do you tear it down? Because Barack Obama, the first black president of the United States, was a facilitator, promoter, pusher of the murder of babies.
So around the world.
Around the world. Yeah. So you tear down the statue? I mean, I would say no. I mean, I did not vote for him. I think he was a terrible president myself, but I can see the value of having the first black president memorialized with a statue and recognizing the step forward that represented for our country to elect a black person as president.
On that score, I really hope that people aren't making Trump statues right now. I don't think they are, but I would hate to be part of the conversation where you tried to decide whether or not to put up a Trump statue or tear it down. Just make it more complicated and like depressing for everyone.
Right.
What about the people who wanted to put him on Mount Rushmore? Now, those people are just wicked. I'm just kidding. Oh, you know what? We did get another question. How long have we been talking again? You can't answer this, but it could be a teaser for next time, because I don't think you have time. But we were congratulated in our great podcast a few weeks ago where we talked about racial divisions and how to think about slavery and race in light of the gospel. We talked about that a while ago. Okay. But then you said that you have feelings more positively disposed toward Donald Trump now than in 2016. And this person would appreciate it if you would just clarify what you mean that, because they said, what?
Okay. I don't mean I have positive thoughts about that he's had some kind of moral change or some kind of conversion experience. Now he's now a believer in Jesus Christ, full of virtue and honor. But what I mean is I think, you know, my key and core issue in everything in American politics, where I have two of them, is abortion and gay marriage. And both those have to do with religious rights too, religious freedom. And President Trump, for all his terrible faults, has done some good things with regard to abortion.
He's actually done more good things with regard than George Bush did.
Yeah. So, right.
He, without actually being like really pro-life, I don't think anybody really believes he's pro-life. He's actually done some things to more institutionally. Better, right? Yeah.
So that's why I'm better disposed to him. That's the only reason. Now he's horrible on gay marriage. I mean, he's
yeah. I mean, you can buy Pride merch on his website, like MAGA hats that are rainbow colored.
So I still probably won't vote for him, but I'm more positively disposed toward him because I thought all of his pro-life rhetoric was just rhetoric. And, you know, he hasn't defunded Planned Parenthood. I think he tried to in one of his bills, but it hasn't gone through. But that I know of, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
You can keep qualifying it.
Exactly. I don't know. I said that. I'm not sure if he did or not. But in general, he's been better than anyone else so far. We can't be just someone who says we have to be nuanced here. We have to say, okay, there's some really good things he's done. There's some really horrible things he's said. So many horrible things he said.
And it's hard to know what he said and what he's like, making a distinction between what he said and what he's done, because I don't think he's doing a lot. It seems like he says a lot more than he does.
Yeah.
And that may be the nature of the job. I'm not really sure how much he can do. And the things he says are, I don't even know. I don't even have words. Yeah. Often when I think about the things that Mr. Trump says, I find the language itself fails me. Because, okay, I adopted a sense of that I, first of all, when Mr. Obama was president, I decided I wasn't in my mind. I think I've done this for every presidency, kind of push the mute button. Like, I don't watch speeches unless I really, really have to.
Yeah.
And I try to be really charitable. So that means often not to be careful, not to spend too much time listening to what, or I pay attention to politics, but yeah, listening to what a person is saying, I try to hit the mute button,
right,
the moral mute button on in my mind. So I did that with Mr. Obama. I tried really hard to not be angry all the time. Again, not because of his race or ethnicity at all, but because I was really grieved about the abortion issue,
yeah,
for him. Okay, so I've done that with Mr. Trump as well. I've refused to become riled up as much as possible, that which means I don't read his tweets, I don't listen to his speeches, I don't.
Here's the dog right up to the microphone. Well,
hello. So anyway,
maybe that's our cue.
I think we've been talking a really long time. He's like sitting on the microphone. Well, hello. Did you miss us? So, I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I think it's probably time for us to go do something else. But hopefully, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.